The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. The Premier League, Sergio Aguero's really good, Marcus Rashford is really good, and so is Heung-Min Son. Elsewhere, Everton lose the Everton Cup final, there's a spate of ludicrous handballs, and Christian Benteke tries an overhead kick. Norwich win the big game in the Championship, and Qatar win the big game in Asia. In Europe, Bayern are beaten, Juve drop points, and Messi pulls Barca back. We'll do all of that, answer your questions, and try not to talk too much about cats on the pitch. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Jonathan Wilson, hello.
Morning.
How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, really good, thanks. We've had that chat off air, but nice to have it again just to clarify.
Yeah, you'd give you a different answer this time, but...
yeah, you did. It was a shorter and more on-air based answer than you gave me earlier. Susie Rack, hello.
Hello, good morning.
Fresh from Crawley, where you saw the Cup doubleheader.
I don't know about fresh, but back from Crawley.
Okay, yeah, I will get into that in a bit. Hello, Barry Glendenning.
Hello, Max Rush.
Nice to see you.
And you.
Good. Should we start at the Etihad? City 3, Arsenal 1. Manchester City are back. Jonathan, you were there. Did you have a nice time?
Yeah, it was all right. A bit stingy with the gnocchi, but apart from that, it was fine. I mean,
They were a bit stingy with the gnocchi.
Yeah.
Okay. Was that the pre-match?
Yeah. Well, the problem with City is that they have three different things. So they have, it was like a fish, it was pork, and there was gnocchi. But the gnocchi looked really nice. The pork, I thought, looked slightly underdone. I don't think it rendered the fat properly. So normally I would have gone for the pork.
Yeah.
But they seem to have a sort of sense that kind of you'll have a bit of everything. Well, I just wanted the gnocchi and then maybe a bit of broccoli with that. And the broccoli was very nice. It was done with toasted almonds. And so, you know, she spoons on a couple of spoonfuls of gnocchi and looks at me, hopefully, like I might take some fish or some pork off her. Like, just have some more gnocchi, please. But I didn't think I got a full pork. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. I mean,
at least Arsenal could beat them at something.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
yeah. Arsenal's food's gone backwards. But anyway, people don't want to hear that.
No, they don't. But I mean, on gnocchi, I mean, you'd never order it if there was any other pasta-based thing available. And you only need three and you're full, don't you?
No. There's also a day of the month in Argentina, like the 27th or something, near the end of the month, where people traditionally eat gnocchi because it's sort of the cheap meal you'd make with what you got left before you get your wages at the beginning of the next month.
When I was on holiday and I listened to the pod, even I got frustrated with how long it took for the pod to start talking about football. So maybe I should learn a lesson. Let's talk about the football match.
I thought it was quite an odd game because City were totally dominant in the second half, won it quite comfortably in the end. And yet, until the period between Arsenal equalising and Aguero getting a second with a really beautiful goal, I thought City were really flat. I thought there's that same sort of lack of rhythm, that lack of tempo that you'd seen at Newcastle, that you'd seen in the games against Leicester and Palace. Guardiola seemed very, even more intense than normal on the touchline. Bernardo Silva ballooned a shot over at one point and he went berserk on the touchline. And they felt very nervy and very stressed. And you sort of think if it had been a team other than Arsenal, a team that actually could have taken advantage of that rather than an Arsenal team who hasn't beaten a top six team away in 4 years, would they have been in trouble? But at the same time, we've been saying for ages, oh, your City lack leadership. When they get under pressure, they don't find a way through it. Well, they did, so...
It's interesting you say that, because to me, Barry, it just looked like a very simple Man City win.
I don't think it was simple. After going a goal up, they have this tendency to lose focus, drift, and for 20 minutes of the first half up to half time, Arsenal were the better team, I thought, and should probably have capitalised on their dominance and gone ahead, and that would have given City plenty to worry about at half time and in the second half. But I think the Arsenal team that Unai Emery put out has too many passengers in it, players that aren't good enough for Arsenal. I'm thinking Alex Iwobi, Stefan Lichtsteiner.
Lichtsteiner had a shocking game, didn't he?
Skodran Mustafi. They're not good enough to play for a top six Premier League team, I think. And, like Jonathan says, if a team better than Arsenal, or better able to capitalise than Arsenal had been playing, Manchester City may have had trouble. But yeah, in the end, they ran out pretty easy winners because they completely dominated the second half. I don't know if that was due to Arsenal's just not being good enough or them getting a rocket from Guardiola at half-time, because, you know, we hear about Maurizio Sarri saying he has trouble motivating Chelsea, and I think Pep is perhaps having a bit of difficulty keeping City's minds on the job sometimes.
Well, I think the other thing with City, when the team sheet came in, everybody was still looking at it going, how's that work? What, they're playing three at the back, but nobody on the left? And you know, eventually Fernandinho was playing at centre-back. But that seemed an odd selection. He very rarely plays Fernandinho, Gundogan, David Silva and De Bruyne together. Now, this season, there's been injury issues that might have prevented that happening. But last season, that four played together in the League Cup final when they were rubbish in the first half and then beat Arsenal 3-0 in the end. The first leg of the Champions League quarterfinal against Liverpool when they got ripped apart in the first half. The previous season, they played together four times in the league. They only won one of those. So I think if those four play together in midfield, they're a bit similar. When you see that team sheet, when you work out how they're playing, you think, has Guardiola overthought this? And I think there is a feeling that maybe he's guilty of that. When he gets to a big game, when he's really under pressure, he does something too complicated. But then, you know, it's Fernandinho stepping forward from the back into the space that's there because people aren't expecting the centre-back to step out, that creates the second goal. So in that sense, he was vindicated, but then the previous half hour he wasn't. So I don't know anything. I have not an idea what went on. Those were the things that were vaguely going through my head as I was trying to find a narrative.
Susie, do you have any idea what's going on?
Other than Arsenal just looked absolutely at sea defensively. I mean, it was a state. I shiver whenever I see Mustafi and Lichtensteiner on the squad sheet. I think the thing for Man City is that kind of no matter how bad they play, they know where Aguero is going to be in the box, and that can dig them out of a hole when a team sits off them like that. The idea that Aguero is given that much space, a completely free header inside the first minute, for me is just absolutely criminal. Every player in the league knows that Aguero is going to be in the box. Why aren't you marking him? Why aren't you putting pressure on him? That was the biggest frustration for me, obviously, with my biases.
I mean, I've started to feel sorry for Lichtensteiner, you know, because obviously we all know what sort of, he might be lovely off the pitch, but how sort of terrible he is, sort of diving and cheating, etc., etc. But actually now I've gone past the stage of disliking him as a footballer. I just feel sorry for him.
I saw one of the tweets and said, is he as bad as Sylvester's signing? And I think that's an interesting question. I think not quite, because I think Sylvester was gifted to us by Ferguson, which adds to the embarrassment of just how absolutely rubbish he ended up.
that's kind of what I mean about overthinking, though, because when you've got Lichtensteiner on the opposition, just pop the ball in behind him again and again and again. And you don't have to do anything more complicated than that. And that's where all three goals came from in the end.
They were playground textbook stuff, weren't they, really?
Mikel Silvestre once gave me a bottle of rum.
What kind?
His own rum.
Homemade?
Yeah, well, I mean, who knows? He probably joined part of a team that were making rum that they thought if they put Mikel Silvestre's name to it, it would sell a whole lot.
Was it nice?
I don't drink rum, so I don't think I ever opened it, if I'm honest.
Is a proper rum with a proper label and a sealed bottle, or like my dad's slow gin with just like,
Mikel Silvestre's mead that he just gave to me in a bag.
Mikel's moonshine.
We should mention, you mentioned the second goal, and that was, Jonathan, a glorious pass from Gundogan.
From Fernandinho, wasn't it?
No, I'm thinking the... No, Fernandinho played out the chip from Gundogan.
Back to Sterling.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out there were several excellent components to that goal. Something for everybody. Yes, it was. It was really just a very, very good goal. And given how deep Arsenal were sitting, the fact that you can sort of pick them apart with one, two, three, four passes is a great goal.
Is Aguero, he's not as underrated as Mark Albrighton, obviously on the underrated scale, but is he underrated, Aguero? He's never been player of the year, doesn't often get in the team of the year. He's really good.
I don't think he's underrated. He definitely won the Football Supporters Federation Player of the Year award once, because I remember he turned up for the awards for me. I think he was flown down in a helicopter and spent, I would say, all of 3 minutes at the awards ceremony before hightailing it out as quick as he could. But yeah, he's 40 goals in 62 matches against the big six. I think he's, you know, ridiculous number of hat-tricks. I don't know the exact...
12 hat-tricks, 10 in the Premier League.
Yeah, second in the all-time Premier League list, one behind Shearer, one ahead of Fowler, two ahead of Henry and Kane and Owen.
Right, well...
But I still don't think he's viewed as a sort of complete Premier League hero, Susie.
I just think he lacks a bit of personality, public personality anyway. I think that's what's missing. So he kind of falls off the radar a bit. People like someone with a bit of character, and we don't really know him. And so he gets a little bit forgotten in that sense. I think there's no doubt that he's a brilliant striker and probably one of the best the Premier League's seen, but it's hard to fall in love with him in the way that you do with so many others.
I think his consistency is incredible. That even though he has had spells when he's had a long time out with injury, he hasn't failed to get into double figures for a season since he was 17. That's an incredible record.
Yeah, it is. City play Everton on Wednesday in the Premier League. With Pep getting a bit nervy, as you're suggesting, Jonathan, and Liverpool...
He was really snippish in the press conference as well.
Was he?
Yeah.
What did you ask him?
Well, nothing. I sat at the back and watched. Okay. I was pontificating.
Who was he snippish with?
Everybody. I mean, Jamie Jackson asked the first question and the second question, which were kind of the same question, but both of them got a kind of no kind of response. He was bizarrely short with Rory Smith, whose question was a very straightforward kind of, has Aguero's game changed since he got here? And Pep was like, I didn't see him play before I came here, which is clearly not true. And also, why would you not just sort of say, yeah, he's a great player, he's been, you know, developing his range of skills? It was such an easy question to answer if you didn't want to give a full answer. I mean, obviously what Rory wanted was him to talk about how Aguero's pressing has developed since Guardiola got there. Which again, why would you not want to talk about that? He was oddly short with people. So I think he's really felt the pressure this week.
So if he's feeling the pressure and, you know, the way Liverpool looked nervy in the week, does that open the door for Spurs to sort of spawny their way with late winners in unconvincing performances week by week?
I mean, that'd be great, wouldn't it? I'd love that.
I think a lot of people would love that.
Just to shut down this kind of endless, tedious debate about, Pochettino hasn't won a trophy.
Susie, you don't want that to happen with your obvious bias. But look, they beat Newcastle. It's three late winners in the row for Spurs. It's not very Spursy, Barry.
No, it isn't very Spursy, I suppose. I think they were lucky on Saturday because Newcastle's goalkeeper, Martin Dubravka, made an uncharacteristic error and the goal was very soft. But hats off to Son, who's... timely return from the Asian Cup has Spurs really benefited from that. He's just a super player. And it's funny because when Pochettino arrived first, it was sort of thought, would Son even have a future there? And he's been one of their most important players, despite somehow sort of still being a bit peripheral, you know. But... I still can't see Spurs winning the title, but I would possibly die laughing if they did, because very few people have given them a prayer. Pardon?
Just incentive upon incentive.
Poch says Son is like a battery. You work until it's gone, and then presumably he finds a USB port and recharges him. He's a great footballer, Susie, isn't he?
He's brilliant. I was at... a well-known sporting goods shop in central London the other day. He's the most bought shirt name on the back printing there. They had sold out of Sun shirts entirely. He's ahead of any other player of any club.
Is that just because it's cheap, because it's three letters? Or
quite possibly.
Or were you in New Malden?
Sorry?
Or were you in New Malden?
Yeah, no, it's central London. Right. Oxford Circus.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And he's the most bought shirt.
Right.
And he's two-footed. Yeah, and not enough footballers are two-footed, Wilson. It's a bugbear of mine.
Yeah. I mean, those things are true. Mm. All three of those things are true. Hmm. More players should be two-footed, not enough players are, and it's a bugbear of yours. I agree with all of those.
So Spurs, what do you reckon, Barry?
He does have 2 feet.
Well, he does have, I mean, but most players, I'm going to say all in the Premier League do,
yeah,
don't they? If one doesn't, you know, if there is a sort of Adam Hills-style player who has an artificial leg, one of them, then they're doing very well to be in the Premier League.
I once drank beer out of Adam Hills's foot.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh. I think you've trumped my Mikel Silvestre rum anecdote. let's hope for a celeb anecdote from Wilson and Rack before we're finished.
Well, I've got a one-legged anecdote.
Okay, go on.
My mate Dave's dad had his leg amputated last year. Right. And they go to a caravan site every year for the holidays. And to make him feel better, the caravan site, their fancy dress this year was themed as pirates.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
How did it go down?
Well, he won. Impeccable.
Chelsea 5, Huddersfield 0. Susie, what did we learn from this? Do we learn that Sarri ball is all fine because Chelsea can bat off Huddersfield? Or do we just learn that Huddersfield aren't really very good?
Bit of both. I mean, I think it showed what an excellent signing Higuain is already. And he's got massive contribution to make towards the end of the season. He buys into Sarri ball. You know, he's been most successful under Sarri. I think he's got 38 in 37 games under him. I thought his movement was immense. But I thought the players that came into Chelsea's starting 11 really made a difference. I thought Christensen was extremely authoritative. Barkley, some really, really nice passing. And the goals were good. I think it was really important, obviously, that they bounced back after such a disappointing loss. And it shows that Sarri can get something out of the players. It's not quite reached Mourinho levels of disappointment where the players stop playing for him. And it shows that there's a route out.
Barry?
Huddersfield was so bad. So it's a good confidence booster for Chelsea after a terrible midweek performance, but we'll see what they're made of in the next two games, City and Spurs, I think.
It was a perfect team to play after that defeat, wasn't it, really?
I mean, yeah, they were impressive, but they might as well have been playing, you know, the kids in a training match. I think Huddersfield were dreadful.
Or playing Jonathan's mates, Dave's dad.
And Adam Hill.
Wilson, Higuain, do you think that is, you know, it seems a sensible piece of business, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, yeah, he's obviously a very good player. I know he's had issues with misses in major finals, but that's not really the issue at the minute. They just need goals and they need something that allows Hazard to move back to the left. I think it's good he's got the goals early. I think Higuain is quite a fragile personality, so to get 2 goals in his second start, at least he's up and running now. But, you know, that isn't the test. You'd expect him to beat Huddersfield. So.
What have you made of the whole Sarri situation?
Well, I think it's a lesson in how context is everything. And I think a manager having a go at his players in public isn't always, you know, it depends on who the manager is. It depends on the circumstances. And there seems to be a lot of sort of copperplate responses of boilerplate responses. That's the term I'm looking for. Seems to be a lot of boilerplate responses of, oh, manager slags the players in public, must be a bad thing. But I think it just depends on the relationship between the squad and the manager. I think Sarri is not Mourinho, he's not Conte. He has a much closer, warmer relationship with his squad. And so it probably has a different effect. But, you know, the whole issue with Sarri is when you bring him in, you've got to commit to give him 2 years because his football is idiosyncratic. And there's no point in getting somebody in to play an idiosyncratic style unless you're going to give him A, the players he needs, and B, the time he needs to instill that style.
But a lot of Chelsea fans are infuriated by his intransigence. Should they just relax and go, it's got to take time?
Well, if they're furious with intransigence, they should have been furious with it when they appointed him because he is an intransigent man.
So they probably didn't know he was intransigent when he first came in.
I mean, that's what Sarri is. So, but yeah, they must have known that his style of football was...
I think the board may have known, but I don't think, you know, Chelsea fans who don't follow Serie A probably didn't know that much about Sarri. He turns up and they go, oh, this is exciting. He's got ball. You put ball on the end of his name and it's a type of football, but actually it's not working. And that whole sort of Kante, Jorginho thing is, I know it's a very...
Well, the Kante thing's the biggest issue, I think, because you've got the player who's arguably been Chelsea's best player over the previous two seasons is having to fulfil a role that I don't even particularly comfortable in.
Do you think it will work eventually?
With Kante? No, I don't.
No, with Sarri ball.
No, because I think they'll lose patience, because I think that's what Chelsea do, and I don't think they've thought it through, and I don't think they'll give him the players he needs, and I think he'll probably disappear within this year at some point.
Okay. Some positive news for Chelsea fans. Leicester nil, Manchester United 1. United above Arsenal now, 2 points off Chelsea. Susie, do you have them favourites for fourth place now?
Personally, I do. The interesting thing about this game was they won ugly, and that was kind of the first time they've done that in Solskjaer's new reign, and that's key, especially going into the month ahead that they've got. There's been a lot of talk about whether Solskjaer should get the job now. I think that's really, really premature. I think the interesting thing, though, is how important Phelan's been to the whole situation for me.
How do we know Mike Phelan is so important?
That's a good question, but... You know, you could argue that was Moyes' biggest mistake, bringing in his backroom staff at the start.
Yeah, possible. All we really know that Mike Phelan does for watching just the game is pops balloons when Sir Alex doesn't want balloons popped near him.
Wears shorts as well.
Does wear shorts all year round. the whole backroom staff thing is quite interesting, isn't it, in terms of who does what at a football club. You know, I keep seeing Steve Bould, you know, at Arsenal, and still wonder exactly what he's doing. I saw him applaud.
You can't deny you sorted out the defence. Okay. Unless you actually watch them play.
No, but I saw him applaud when Koscielny scored yesterday, and I never saw him even do that under Wenger. So he's been given like a Sammy Lee role now.
He's got to have something to applaud.
You know the story about Sammy Lee and the Weathers Originals, do you?
I don't, and I'd like to hear it.
There's a mate of mine who interviewed Sam Allardyce, and Sam Allardyce was being driven somewhere. So my mate is in the back of the car with Sam Allardyce doing the interview.
Yeah.
There's a driver, and Sammy Lee sitting in the front seat. When Sammy Lee travels, he doesn't like to wear trousers. So Sammy Lee's sitting there in his boxer shorts, unwrapping Weathers Originals and passing them back to Sam.
Hang on.
What a dynamic.
What, Sammy Lee, all types of just driven? I mean, on a flight, if you're on a Ryanair flight, surely...
I have heard witness statements about Sammy Lee's lack of trousers wearing in a car.
Okay.
I do not
just
know...
Just one, or do we have more than one source?
Well, I mean, apparently when he took the trousers off, my mate, his eyebrows were raised, and he was explaining how Sammy always travels like this.
Did he take his trousers off before he got in the car? Because it's hard to take trousers off... Once you're in the car seat, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Sammy Lee is shorter than most people, so he probably has more room.
That's true.
But yeah, I don't know. I don't know that.
If you're saying Manchester United won ugly for the first time, are you saying when they beat Spurs, they just won very fortunately? There are two ways of winning, I suppose. I see your point. But Leicester could have got something out of this game, don't you think, Susie?
Potentially. It was a very niggly game. It's a lot of cards for... Mike Dean was definitely trying to dish out enough yellows that eventually he'd get his 100th red.
He had a chance, though, to give out reds, didn't he? I thought Matic could have gone quite easily.
Matic, Mendy, yeah. Really poor game.
Do you think he's waiting for a really special occasion to give his red? he doesn't want it just to be an ordinary two yellows. It's got to be something spectacular.
I just really want the cards to be glitter.
an enormous ruby.
Or like a really giant, like a sort of... a celebrity check, like a postcode lottery check. Mike Dean will run off the pitch and bring out a massive red card.
Do you know how many yellows he's given out in his career?
No.
It's somewhere, we couldn't quite work it out yesterday, but somewhere between 2,300 and 2,400.
And is that...
Between 2,700 and 2,800.
And that, is that par for the course, or is it way above everyone else?
Oh, I don't know, we didn't check anybody else. Okay, there's only one referee people care about.
Wayne
Barron's the rugby referee. There was some international player retiring after many years of service. In his final game, Wayne Barron sin-binned him and afterwards wrote an apology on the card, signed it and gave it to your man to mark the occasion of his retirement.
That's nice, isn't it? Well, we need to know if Mike Dean is above average on giving out cards. I've already noticed Paul Tierney's arms recently. They're very hairy.
Hairy arm, Paul Tierney.
And he rolls his sleeves right up when he gives a penalty. It's very... Richard Keyes.
Ask me... Who should we look up? Michael Oliver. Should we look at Michael Oliver?
Let's look at Michael Oliver.
This season only. Mike Dean. Mm-hmm. 102 yellow cards.
Yeah.
Michael Oliver, 102 yellow cards.
So there we are.
However,
yeah.
Michael Oliver, 30 matches. Mike Dean, 24. Mike Dean, red cards, 6 straight reds and 4 for 2 yellows. So 10 for 102. 10 reds for 102 yellows. Michael Oliver, 7 reds. So 5 straights and 2 for 2 yellows to 102.
I'm not sure there's enough in it for to say Dean is a real, you know... disher.
That would suggest a lower percentage of yellows to red. Well, hang on, no, but he's in 20% fewer games. He's giving out the same of yellow cards and more reds.
Okay, I'll take it back. I thought Harvey Barnes looked good, Susie. Leicester youth product, loaned to MK Dons Barnsley this season, West Brom. He did very well at West Brom. They were sad to lose him. But he looks... I mean, Leicester are a funny team, but he looked excellent, I thought.
Yeah, and I think Puyol's... be quite good at giving young players a chance. A lot of fans seem to be quite frustrated when Maddison was hooked off, but Barnes is another example of him giving them the space to play and a chance to show what they can do, and I think that's a positive for them from a poor game.
A big month for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, Barry. PSG in the Champions League, Chelsea in the FA Cup, Liverpool in the Premier League. Will this be the making of him?
It could be. Obviously, people have been making noises saying that he should get the job. And Jonathan Pierce, the BBC commentator, said some contact of his at Old Trafford, a former legend, had said they are going to give Solskjaer the job. But... depends how he gets on in these games, I'd imagine, because there are 4 big games coming up. If he wins them, I would imagine he'll be bulletproof. And if it all goes horribly wrong, they may just revert back to their original plan to presumably try to get Mauricio Pochettino in. But I think he might be more inclined to go to Real Madrid.
Oh, we'll check with Sid in a bit if he thinks that's the case. And that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll start with the Everton Cup final. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. On the 15th of March, Barry, we're doing a live show in Hackney.
Hurrah.
Are you excited?
Yes.
It's at Earth.
I'm not familiar with the venue, but I've seen it on the interweb and it looks very nice.
Okay.
It's a good venue.
Is it a good venue, yeah. Susie?
I grew up in Hackney.
Will we go down well there, do you think?
I don't know.
Hipsters.
Yeah, I was going to say, grow your hair a bit long and... drink a posh craft beer and you'll be fine.
Okay, I am not drinking craft beer.
I think we're sponsored by Wine Berry.
Oh, I love craft beer.
Excellent news. Me, you.
I hope there's fennel in it.
and a couple of others as yet to be decided. Everton 1, Wolves 3. I've called this the Everton Cup final in the race for 7th place. How big a crisis is there at Goodison, Jonathan Wilson?
I don't know if it's a crisis, but I mean... Marco Silva's career seems to follow a very obvious path of it starts well and then halfway through the season it fades pretty badly. I know he came in at Hull, not at the start of the season, but decent start and then faded. Watford, decent start and then faded, albeit after the disruption of him being sort of touted for the Everton job. And the same thing's happened again. They've lost 6 of the last 9 games. Looked pretty drab on Saturday. And I think the real worry there is, they've spent a lot of money on players and very few of them seem to fit together.
Silva says, when you're talking to me about ambition or motivational focus, to me, that's the obligation of the player, Susie. I mean, presumably the manager has some role in motivating the players, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, otherwise, why is the manager there? Obviously... do a lot of tactical work and things with players off the pitch, but the key is the motivating factor. You see it everywhere, Mourinho and Solskjaer, the difference is how he's motivating those players and getting the best out of them and getting them to want to play for him. Everton just looked poor. I mean, just looked defensively extremely weak, lacked chances, giving away the penalty.
They can't defend set pieces either.
Well, that's the other recurring Marco Silva trait, isn't it? That his teams can never defend set pieces, which is him, right? There's nobody else to blame for that. That's his job, is to sort of defending set plays.
And he does zonal marking, which the proper football men don't like. Just man-to-man, Wilson.
See, I just don't think this is true. Brian Clough zonal marked set plays. Nobody ever talks about that. You can do either. Just do it well.
So what did they? How are they doing it badly?
But they're not picking up. I mean, you saw the... which goal was it?
The second goal where Richarlison lets... is it Jimenez through?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's just going to sleep. I mean, that's basic. If you're man-marking and you don't follow the man, it's rubbish. If you're zonal-marking and you don't follow the man, it's rubbish. It's not...
Isn't it
by the
more?
Way, you've got a job to
it's
do.
It's just bad marking, whichever kind you're doing.
Isn't it complicated if you're not doing man to man? If you're doing man to man, that's my man. I've got him. I just follow him around. Because
yeah, but then that man, if he's got half a brain, leads you into traffic so people run into each other. Zonal marking is designed to avoid that. Zonal marking, you occupy a bit of the box, and when the ball comes towards you, you attack it. And if somebody goes running past you, you decide whether you have to follow him or whether, you know, by the time the ball gets there, he's going to be in the next zone for that player to attack it.
What if two men come into your zone at the same time?
Well, that's when one of the defenders from another zone would have to come into your zone. But I don't think any of that's that complicated if you practice it. I mean, I think quite a lot of school teams can do that.
Ryan says, who impressed you more on the pitch at Goodison this season, the Cat or Cenk Tosun?
The Cat. although he did seem quite nervy, as Tosun does sometimes as well. There was a brilliant Five Live radio commentary of the Cat's intervention where without missing a beat, I can't remember the commentator's name, but he just did basically 2 minutes of commentary on what the Cat was doing. If you look at the figures of that game, weirdly, they had 4 shots on target each. Everton had 13 attempts on goal to Wolves' 8. Everton had more corners, 3-1, and Everton had 64% possession. And yet, you know, that suggests Everton did okay. But watching the actual game, they were second best by a long way.
Hadji says, as the record holders for the amount of Everton Cup wins, I understand there will be much pod talk of the demise of Everton. However, please don't neglect how marvellous Wolves have been recently and throughout the season as a whole. And we got in trouble for not talking enough about Wolves after they hammered West Ham and going big on West Ham on Thursday. So we are due some Wolves praise.
Yeah, they're a great team, and we've said that on many occasions in the pod. I think we didn't give them much airtime last week, but it would be... someone was complaining to me that we never talk about them, which simply isn't true. But I love watching them play.
Didn't you predict them to win the Champions League this season or something?
No, I predicted they'd be knocking on the door of the top four by the end of next season.
Right.
And that they would probably do very well this season.
Their kit, I really like it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've heard grumbles it's not old gold. But I think that is old gold. What do Wolves fans think? Is that proper old gold? And if it isn't old gold, what is old gold?
What are the grumbles? That it's, what, too orange?
I think it's too yellow. But I think they've had times when they've been too orange. And I think old gold is that just sort of slightly darker yellow colour, isn't it? But I don't know. I need clarification.
Well, we need some help from some Wolves fans, clearly, because it looks...
Anyway, it looks nice.
It looks pretty Wolvesy to me.
Yeah. And actually... And it looked, that game on Saturday, as has happened with quite a few Wolves games this season, you'd see it on telly and you think, that is an aesthetically pleasing spectacle. Those two kits look good against each other.
Do you know, I completely agree with you. And actually, there weren't that many unacceptable away kits in use.
Do you think your campaign's starting to gain traction?
I hope so. I mean, there is a guy on Twitter who's got about 20,000 followers solely on away kit crimes. So
what
perhaps...
do you think of Watford's?
Say again?
What do you think of Watford's, the green?
No.
Well, that looks like the knockoff Sunderland away kit from 3 years ago, relegation away kit. I don't know why they're doing that.
They look like 11 goalkeepers running around the pitch wearing that. It was hideous.
They've all gone very high vis, the away kits. Something I just don't quite understand. I think someone has said kids like high vis.
Wolves fans are going to love this analysis of how good their team is.
They're wide men. Their fullbacks push on really well. I mean,
Gary Doherty is a revelation.
Doherty.
I'm sorry.
Gary Doherty was back in the day. Yeah. But let's give Matt the credit.
Yes, Matt. And to think that's a fella couldn't get in the Ireland squad.
was remarkable. I thought, you know, he'd be sort of out the door, possibly not good enough for Wolves in the Premier League, but he's been an absolute revelation. I mean, he's a bit of skill for on the touchline before he won the penalty. Was it Leighton Baines brought him down? It's just brilliant. But he's been so good all season, and I think pretty much ever present, unless he's been suspended at some point. And then on the other wing, Johnny, super.
Chris says, if the Everton Cup was an actual trophy, what would it look like? How do you properly encapsulate the mediocrity, self-loathing and apathy? Is it just an 8x11 portrait of Big Sam?
I think you'd have to kind of have it in the... You're fashioned like that tower that's on the Everton badge, wouldn't you? So slightly crumbling, but in basically in the shape of that tower with a staircase on the outside.
Okay, and Big Sam's head on the top?
with Stanley Lee, without his trousers on, tossing Weathers originals.
Like a Pez dispenser. Burnley, at Burnley Palace and at Cardiff, there were silly handballs that gave away penalties.
A rash of them.
A spate, I've called it. You say a rash, a spate. I mean, it seems a strange decision for defenders to jump and punch the ball when they're in the box.
Well, the worst one was the Bournemouth one, wasn't it? That was the daftest one, and so early in the game.
And he really had to stretch to get it.
That was one where there was absolutely no excuses. The other two, you could say, oh, well, you know, the ball sort of hit his arm rather than...
I think Cyrus Christie's was pretty bad as well.
No, but he did have a player. It was Benteke, I think, on him. You know, he had a player on him, at least, didn't he?
But he's so much time to take his arm out of the way. But, yeah...
Do you think he himself was puzzling just why on earth he got selected ahead of Matt Doherty? And then we say, would I have gone ahead of Gary Doherty?
Anyway, is there any reason why that's happening, or is that just random? It happens more in football than it should, I believe.
I don't know. I think people jump with their arms all the time. You just don't see it unless they clap somebody in the face or the ball hits them.
Yeah. Aguero's third was nudged over the line by his arm, wasn't it?
Yeah. So his arm was down, to be fair. It couldn't really be lower.
It wasn't a natural position.
If the ratio is a quarter, then... Yeah, could be worth the shot.
Yeah, absolutely right.
I like that Tom Williams on Twitter, his gag, that it was a perfect Argentinian hat-trick. One with the head, one with the right foot, one with the left hand.
That is very good, isn't it?
Hello, everyone. It's Max here. Due to significant technical difficulties in the studio today, here is an abrupt edit. What will follow, though, is... Barry's thoughts on Ashley Barnes.
You know, we see Will Saha getting sent off last week for sarcastically applauding a referee. Ashley Barnes got away with, you know, a foul-mouthed rant right into the assistant referee's face. And if I was the assistant referee, I would have demanded that he be sent off, because I just wouldn't tolerate that from a player. I wouldn't tolerate it from anyone.
Great goal from Nathan Redmond in this game. Tom Heaton made a very good save as well from... Danny Ings, and he's made a big difference to Burnley since coming in. Sam asks, now that Sean Dyche's side were finally awarded a penalty in the league, which Premier League manager will now be haunted by the moaning spirit of Mark Hughes? My money is on Marco Silva, and he might have a point, I guess.
Well, I think Sean Dyche, you know, the way the non-celebration is a thing, I think Sean Dyche has sort of elevated the non-complaint to a bit of an art form, whereas he seems to be constantly complaining about something but manages to package it in a way that sends the message that, you know, I don't mind too much about this, you know.
It's just the way things are these days.
I don't want to complain about the handball, the disallowed goal and the five other things, which he will list that went against the team, because tonight's not about that. But, you know, so... Steve Bruce is quite good at that as well, but who's a big moaner? I'd say Hodgson could have his moments.
I just don't think Hodgson. I mean, his moans are so sort of circumlocutory; it's quite hard to work out that he is moaning.
What we really want from Roy is just, you know, a very gif-able rub of the face, don't we, when he's unhappy. Speaking of Roy, Palace beat Fulham 2-0, of which, for me, Jonathan, the absolute highlight was Christian Benteke attempting that overhead kick. I mean, and connecting brilliantly, and you sort of think fair play if you are Sergio Aguero and you've scored hundreds of goals, but if you haven't scored for about 17 years, it's a very bold thing to do.
Yeah, and he probably didn't expect to connect that well. He's probably expecting to scuff it across goal in the far corner rather than pinging it off the angle.
Good win for them. I mean, how much trouble... is there any chance for Fulham, do you think?
There's I don't a bit think, of space. No. I think they needed to build on that, you know, the comeback win in the week. I think, you know, that was when they might have had a bit of momentum, but they seemed really flat in this game.
Although Mitrovic could have had a really good chance of the header and should have had a penalty.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's true.
But they're so reliant on him, though. They're so reliant on him to score. If he has a bad day, they've got no hope.
And they need, more or less, to score at least two goals a game to have any hope of staying up. And because they're conceding so many, and you just can't see that happening.
But, I mean, the gap now is, what, 7 points? Mm-hmm. And that's 7 points to Burnley and Southampton and Newcastle, all of whom have been playing a bit better recently. So, I mean, I think even Cardiff, although, you know, obviously a good win on Saturday, I suppose they're only 2 points behind, but you sort of feel that it's between Cardiff and Newcastle for that last spot.
Yeah, and then you suspect Newcastle would have enough.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Rondon, I think, is good enough to win a couple of games, and then if Almiron is as good as people seem to think he is, then yeah.
Very good win for Cardiff. Strange Bournemouth, you know, to go from smashing Chelsea to being very out of sorts in that game. Neil Warnock was very emotional after the game on the pitch, Barry, and you know, it's been a tricky time for Cardiff. On Sunday, we heard the wreckage of the plane that vanished with Emiliano Sala on board was found within hours of a search starting in the sea off the Channel Islands. And, you know, Warnock was emotional after the game. And you've said before that Cardiff have dealt with this situation very well, actually.
Yeah, I think they nailed it. It's a weird situation for them grieving a player. Very few of them had actually met. I think Sol Bamba and Neil Warnock himself were the only two who actually knew him personally. And the fans are grieving this player they've never seen play and sort of knew very little about. So there was the potential there for excessive mawkishness, which occasionally happens in football, but it didn't happen. And I think they've deserve a huge amount of credit for how they dealt with it.
The final game in the Premier League was Brighton 0, Watford 0. Don't really have to say a whole lot about this, apart from Watford's tweet at the end of the game. No need for man of the match this week. We'll do limb of the match. 12% Ben Foster's left foot, 18% Ben Foster's left hand, 21% Ben Foster's right foot, 49% overwhelmingly Ben Foster's right hand. So well done to Ben Foster. Still doing very well in the Premier League, isn't he? Tonight,
I can't think of a keeper who's been better than him this season, to be honest. And I think he's just really chilled out bloke. He's not that, doesn't care anymore. And that gives him confidence. You know, what
he probably does care a bit, doesn't he?
I know. I mean, I doubt he lies awake at night stressing about his game or his performances. And he's just very relaxed. And that's going to lead to you being delivering the goods, you know.
West Ham play Liverpool tonight. Joe Gomez needs to have surgery on his injury. He'll be out for a bit longer. Robin says, any advice for a Liverpool fan who is struggling to, quote, enjoy the ride, despite everyone telling me this is what I should be doing? I'm just constantly stressed and anxious during and between every game. Should I just be happy we are contending? Jonathan?
Yes.
Barry, how do you see this going?
You would think Liverpool will win and win comfortably going on West Ham's recent form. They've lost three in a row. And yet, I have a feeling in my bones that West Ham will get a result tonight, possibly beat them. So, you know, good news for our stressed out Liverpool fan, because that means they'll probably win 5 or 6-0.
But I think Liverpool have looked stressed out generally. I mean, really, all month. I don't think they've played well in January, have they? You know, they got beat off City, they got beat off Wolves in the Cup. They scraped by Brighton, they scraped by Palace. They drew against Leicester. They haven't played well, and it's
anxiety.
They
played very poorly against Leicester.
And you know, the thing now, and I sort of expect this to happen last week, they kept playing before City, so the pressure was then put on City because they kept extending the lead to 7 points. And City playing first last week, I thought, well, the gap could be down to a point, and then there really, you know, it really is a test of Liverpool's bottle. Well, the gap's now down to 2 points. And not only that, but if Liverpool fail to win tonight, because City got the game on Wednesday because of the League Cup final, and that game against Everton being rearranged, by the time Liverpool play again, they might not even be top.
You went very Macam during that sentence. I enjoyed it. Susie, do you agree? What do you think?
Well, I'm hoping that West Ham getting something out of it. I really want this to go down to the wire and to the last game of the season, because a friend of mine, a massive Liverpool fan, his partner is due to give birth to their first child on the last day of the season. So I want him to have that dilemma of where he goes and what he does. So I'm hoping that, you know, that it stays neck and neck and tight all the way through, and they leapfrog each other right to the end, purely to turn the screws on his decision.
You should try and persuade your friend to name the child after whoever scores the winner that wins Liverpool the title.
I was saying it should be little baby Jürgen, but
yeah. Well, or Jürgen, or you know, there's
Virgil.
Oh, that's a good name.
Virgil's a strong name.
I'm pleased, Barry, you think West Ham might get something out of this game, because it means I can read out this tweet from Tom. Wouldn't it just be cheaper to replace Barry with a Carabao box that repeats, "I get the feeling Liverpool may struggle in this one"?
Well, you've been right for last month, in fairness.
Yeah.
Well, listeners writing in to complain about predictions that people don't get right, that just baffles me. If I got every prediction I made correct,
I wouldn't be here.
I'd be living, you know, on a Caribbean island somewhere in a massive big house.
Is that where you'd go? You'd go to the set of Death in Paradise? I mean, not quite as murderous a one, I imagine.
Probably, yeah. Well, I'd have one home there. I'd have many homes around the world.
When the cricket's
would
on.
You fly out your friends?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, great.
I'd have more money than God, so I'd do whatever I wanted. Oh. But you know, these prophets of the past, I presume they, you know, Liverpool fans have been predicting they'll win the league for the last 30 years. And none of them have got anywhere near being right.
Well, they were right in 1990.
29 years.
I just thought it was quite a funny tweet. You know, but I think you have more to offer than the Carabao box, Barry. Although, the Carabao box is good.
And cheaper.
Yeah.
But it's also mine. So if you get rid of me, I'll be taking the box with me.
Fair enough. In the Football League, game of the day at Elland Road saw Norwich beat Leeds 3-1. Great game. Lots of chances for both sides. Lovely free kick from Mario Vrančić. Put Norwich 1-0 up. Norwich's Tim Krul could have been sent off before Timo Pukki put them 2 up. Leeds could have had a penalty. They had one disallowed after Pontus Janssen was judged to have fouled Tim Krul. Vrančić got his second, Norwich's third, before Patrick, grade 7 violin Bamford, got his consolation for Leeds United. Norwich now above Leeds on
Patrick
goal difference.
Patrick, grade 7 violin Brexit Bamford.
Oh, is he Brexity?
Well, his dad is.
Oh, I didn't know that. Doesn't mean he might not have the same politics as Mr. Bamford.
Well, Mr. Bamford owns is the JCB magnate.
Is he?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
I'm pretty sure he is.
I didn't know they were pro-Brexit, the diggers.
Well,
they had Boris Johnson paid him £10,000 to give that speech, didn't they, last week?
Oh, I didn't read that bit.
You know, the speech, because Boris Johnson famously said, you know, at some point he'd lie in front of a bulldozer. Instead, he lied in front of a JCB digger.
I can't broadcast what I would say about him anyway. Sheffield United are third after beating second bottom Bolton. Billy Sharp scoring his 2 millionth goal. West Brom, Middlesbrough fourth and fifth respectively after Borough went to the Hawthorns and won 3-2. Two late goals from Britta Sombolonga. Another defeat for Ipswich, who are now 8 points from safety. 1-0 to Steve Bruce's Sheffield Wednesday. And Reading nil, Aston Villa nil. Not an exciting game. Nelson Dolivera got a terrible facial injury after Tyrone Mings trod on him. Very hard to tell if it was intentional or not. Seemed to apologise very quickly after the incident had happened, although lots of fans pointing out he did the same thing to Zlatan when he was playing for Bournemouth in a game against Manchester United. It's pretty gruesome, but Jonathan, I mean, sort of impossible to tell, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just sort of a tangle of limbs, and I mean, it looks a little bit like Lukaku kicking Koscielny, wasn't it? Which was, I'm sure, was totally accidental. There you had Lukaku's reaction, which was immediately he knew he kicked him and sort of got the ref to stop the game. But, I mean, I don't know if Mings would even know what he'd trodden on there. So I don't know.
Mm. Well, only he will know if he meant it or not, but give him the
God
benefit.
God knows.
Yes, only he and God will know. Thank you, Barry. In League One, terrible...
I dispute that.
We don't
Does this
God...
cause problems between the British and the Irish before? I'm not sure. This kind of thing caused problems between the British and the Irish before?
What, Tyrone Mings?
No, arguments about the existence of God.
We do Brexit and the God delusion in one pod. Terrible news in League One. I don't know how God feels about Luton being top, but I'm not happy. Caretaker manager Big Mick Harford. They won 3-0 at relegation.
They're very
threatened.
Much a team in Mick Harford's image as well, aren't they?
Are they?
Physical and big and surprisingly successful.
Mm. Anyway, they're 6 points clear of Barnsley, who moved into second with a win over Scunthorpe. Portsmouth are third after being held by Doncaster. Cup heroes AFC Wimbledon rock bottom, losing 1-0 at fourth place Sunderland.
How did they score four times against West Ham? They were utterly awful.
You went?
Yeah, it was one of the worst games of football I've ever seen. It was freezing cold. Brilliant goal made McGee to win it. But Sunderland were terrible, Wimbledon were worse. It was an awful game of football. To let in four to that lot, I mean... I don't know how.
In League Two,
there's days when you think I don't know anything.
In League Two, four games postponed because it's cold, including Cambridge's game at Cheltenham. Another day unbeaten. Some nice symmetry. The leaders played the bottom side. Second played second bottom. Sadly, this didn't go all the way through the table. Lincoln were held at bottom side. Notts County, they missed a late penalty, which is annoying. Mansfield in second beat second bottom. Sol Campbell's Macclesfield. Good. It was the cup for women's football, wasn't it, Susie? A break from the WSL. You went to Crawley to see two football matches.
Yeah, so kind of weirdly, Brighton play in Crawley at Crawley Town's ground, 22 miles north of Brighton. Apparently, you know, it's scandalous when the men's team don't have a ground, but the women's team, that's okay. It doesn't matter for them. They were hosting Man United, so it was a championship WSL top of the table clash and a test for Man United before they likely go up next season. It was 17-year-old Lauren James that scored twice for Man United to put them through to the next round, and she started off at Arsenal and left them to join Casey Stoney's new side, and she's, I'd say, almost definitely the most gifted young English player that I've seen since Kelly Smith. Then if we trundled down the road to this little field where Oakfield FC play, and that's where Crawley Wasps play. They're a women's side who aren't affiliated to any men's club. They were offered Crawley Town, but they turned it down. So you had the slightly bizarre situation of 700 fans in a 5,000-6,000 seater stadium to watch the Brighton Man United game, and 1,500 crowded round the muddy field with these little rickety stands that held about 60 people each to watch Crawley Wasps take on Arsenal. And it was a good game. Lots of the young Arsenal players, they've got lots of injuries, so they rested a lot of players. And another youngster, 16-year-old, scored a hat-trick, and they won 4-0.
And how's the WSL table looking?
So City are top of the table at the moment. They're 1 point ahead of Arsenal, but Arsenal have a game in hand. And this week is a real crunch one for Man City. This time last year, they were unbeaten in the league. They were in the final of the League Cup, semi-finals of the Champions League and the FA Cup. This season, they're in the same position, though, out of the Champions League. Last season, they finished completely empty-handed. This week, they've got Chelsea on Wednesday night in the League Cup semi-final, and then they play Chelsea in the league on Sunday too. It's quite nice. The club are doing a back-to-back double header, so you can go to the women's game to watch them play Chelsea in a crunch top of the table clash at 1 o'clock, and then you go across the road to the men's game to watch City play Chelsea in another crucial game for them. So it's a really, really nice tie together double header, and hopefully will encourage some of the Chelsea fans as well to stay up and make a day of it too. But it's a really important week for them. This is where they collapsed last season, and it will likely determine whether they finish the season empty-handed, in my opinion.
Susie, could I ask you, as someone who covers and is all across the women's game, do you ever get fed up with the number of football fans who seem to go out of their way to disparage the women's game and show how uninterested they are in it? you know, like, say, for example, I don't like basketball. I find it very easy to avoid. I take no interest in it. It doesn't upset me that other people like and watch basketball. A lot of football fans who you know, focus on men's football seem to get very upset altogether by the fact that women's football league just even gets coverage.
Yeah, it's frustrating, but it's just kind of par for the course of women's sports generally. Whenever any women's sport gets any kind of attention that is seemingly beyond what it deserves, then the trolls jump in and start having a go at the amount of coverage it's getting. It's frustrating when you kind of have to repeatedly talk about the context of the situation, the fact that women's football was banned for 50 years by the FA. They couldn't even play on FA regulated pitches, that it's very much a growth sport, that it's one of the biggest growth sports in the country. I think the FA, of every area of football that they invest in, they make the biggest pound for pound return on women's football. There's huge potential there, and I think that's what gets missed a lot of the time.
And weirdly, it was banned because it was too popular.
Banned because it's too popular. They were raising money for, like, striking minors and things like that. And the women were kind of getting involved in organising and being part of a political movement. And it scared the establishment. And so they made up an excuse to stop it.
All right, that'll do for part two. We'll begin part three with Sid in Spain. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Let's start in Spain with Sid Lowe. Sid, how are you doing?
All right, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, excellent. Before we get to the football, how's the water tank fixed?
So it is fixed. I have hot water, which is a good job because it's very cold.
Marvellous news. What's the biggest story out of Spain this week? Barcelona being held?
Yeah, I suppose it is. They'd won eight in a row until they were held 2-2 by Valencia this weekend. But I think the story, as tends to happen when Messi gets injured, is Messi's potential injury. You get this curious sensation at the Camp Nou every time that there's an injury to him, every time he's down or someone's over to treat him, that the kind of the whole stadium turns to him. It's like the game is irrelevant. What's going on behind him is irrelevant. There's a sort of silence that takes over. Messi clashed with, I think it was Toni Lato at the weekend, got a knee in the thigh, that kind of classic dead leg. It looked like he was down on the touchline for a while. They were massaging his thigh. He came back on, he carried on, he kept playing. There was a moment when he seemed to be saying to Jordi Alba, "No, it's nothing really." But that kind of was the end of the game. Barcelona, who had been 2-0 down, they got it back to 2-1. Messi then made it 2-2. They had a really good start to the second half. But once he'd had that injury, or at least that moment where he didn't seem entirely comfortable, it was like that kind of killed it. That was it. And of course, the significance of this isn't just that Messi might have a minor knock and they'll do tests today. But it's that, of course, they play Real Madrid in the Copa del Rey semi-final first leg on Wednesday night. And that this is the beginning now of the month that tends to cause Barcelona problems. So much so that I think it's been nicknamed by quite a lot of people Kleblery rather than February, because, of course, Alexander Kleb was rubbish and February tends to be rubbish.
Well, it's good to have a month named after you, even if it's not for the right reasons. You mentioned they play Real there. It was a pretty straightforward win for them, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I mean, they were 1-0 up. And they were seemingly comfortable, and they've very definitely come into form now. As I say, the way I kind of look at this now is, right, their pre-season's over. You know, they've started playing well just as the Cup semi-final comes around and, of course, the Champions League. And you start looking at this and you think, you know how this ends now. They're going to be European champions again, having more or less kind of thrown away the first 4 months of the season. They were comfortable, although only 1-0 up. Alaves actually created a couple of sort of semi-chances. Then Madrid got two more late on. Although when I say semi-chances, you know, Alaves' players are very, very conscious of the enormous difference in quality between the two teams. And their sense, not publicly but privately at least, is that, you know, they had chances because Real Madrid at 1-0 up had taken their foot off the gas a little bit. And then once they got the second, that was it. And Madrid do look good. I'll tell you who really looks good is Vinicius, who's really starting to play well.
Morata's return to Atletico Madrid. How did he play?
I don't want to necessarily point the finger at Alvaro Morata, but hey, should we do it? Because it's fun.
Yeah.
Atletico Madrid had lost just once in 31 games, hadn't lost in 18 games in La Liga. Alvaro Morata turns up, plays his first game, and they lose 1-0.
So it's all his fault?
It is all his fault. He was fouled, I think, for a penalty that they probably should have got, and they didn't. And actually, this did make me giggle, because it says something about Spanish TV coverage. And I know this also says something about me. It's how incredibly sad I am. But on last night's roundup of the kind of the weekend's games, I actually decided to count, because I always have this sensation that you know, the controversy, the polemica, as they call it, is always more important than the actual football. I counted yesterday that there were two replays of Atletico Madrid's goal of Betis's goal in the kind of the wrap they did of the game, and of the foul on Morata that would have given them the penalty, there were 26 replays. It's a small difference, I think you'll agree.
Is that, I mean, it, like, I don't know how often you replay count. If it sounds like you do it a great deal. Do you have a record?
This is the case. So yesterday I decided, you know what, I'm going to actually count this. And it was even worse than I imagined.
Finally, Sid, we all love Santi Cazorla as well. And he scored again.
He did score again, and he was absolutely brilliant in the first half, at least. It's true that in the second half, he didn't have quite so much control. And Villarreal are under new management, which is old management. I don't know if you saw this, but last week on Tuesday, they sacked Luis Garcia, their manager, who'd been in charge for 49 days. And they put in charge the man who they had sacked 50 days before. In other words, the man they sacked to bring Luis Garcia in, they put back in charge again. Javier Calleja turned up. It was like the players turn up at training and look, Bobby Ewing's in the shower and Javier Calleja is on the touchline. They, you know, let's just pretend it never happened. Calleja comes in, Villarreal very, very good in the first half. Santi Cazorla was absolutely brilliant. And actually, in fairness, he's been very good all year. Part of the problem is he's got no one to pass the ball to anymore. And he was brilliant. They were 2-0 up and then they blew it and drew 2-2. And in a way, that's what's been happening to them all year. They're not this bad, but defensively, they're awful. The amount of individual mistakes they make is truly pretty embarrassing. And they're in big trouble still. They're 5 points from safety. And frankly, I think they might be going down.
Cheers, Sid. Thanks for your time.
Pleasure.
Have a nice week. Sid Lowe out in Spain. From Spain, let's go to Germany. Leaders Dortmund drop points, drawing 1-1 away at Eintracht Frankfurt. The two goal scorers, Marco Reus, Luka Jovic, incidentally the two highest goal scorers in the league this season. Bayern Munich were on a 7-game winning streak leading into the weekend. They lost their fourth game of the season, 3-1 away at Bayer Leverkusen. That meant Bayern were overtaken in the table by Mönchengladbach, who beat Schalke 2-0 away from home. Rabi Matondo coming on for his debut with 15 minutes to go. His team down to 10 men. The score goalless, only to watch his keeper concede twice in the last 5 minutes. It's worth pointing out that in a previously edited piece, I called him Rabbi Matondo. We don't know. Maybe he, you know, is a Jewish teacher on the side. It would be a coincidence, that's for sure. In France, PSG lost in the league for the first time this season. Jonathan, are you shocked?
It was a really good game, that, actually. I watched it on the train on the way back with Barney on his phone. And it was gripping. It was engaging.
They were beaten 2-1 by Lyon, who had to come from behind to win.
Was it gripping and engaging because it meant you didn't really have to talk to Barney?
I mean, it had that going for it, yeah.
You two bicker like an old married couple.
Well, I wonder who would want to speak to the other less. You might just agree to lie in bed together, watching the telly, but not talking. Anyway, Angel de Mira put the Parisians ahead. A goal from Moussa Dembele, a penalty from Nabil Fekir saw PSG lose for just the second time in the last year. Now they're only 10 points ahead of second place Lille with 3 games in hand. Good news for Monaco. Jardim's back. They won their fourth game of the season, beating Toulouse 2-1. That was his first game back. Asia Cup, Barry. Qatar 3, Japan 1. You watched this.
Yeah, it was an enjoyable game. Qatar deserved to win the tournament, I suppose. They won their 7 games, only conceded 1 goal. But the game was ruined a bit because Qatar were 2-1 up. They went 2-0 ahead and Japan pulled a goal back, and with 10 minutes to go, I looked to me like Japan had them on the ropes and were, you know, aggressively pushing for an equaliser. And then the referee, Mai Ishida, contested an aerial ball with a Qatar player, and the ball came off the Qatar player's head, hit Yoshida's hand. There was absolutely nothing he could do about it. And the ref seemed to let it slide, and then I think someone had a word in his ear, and he went and consulted VAR, his pitch side monitor, and gave an absolutely ridiculous penalty, which Qatar scored and ruined any hopes Japan had of getting back in the game in the last few minutes. So that kind of ruined the game for me a bit, but it was a very entertaining final.
I got a question. I've forgotten who asked it. Where would Qatar be competitive in the English pyramid? The Championship, League One, Premier League?
Absolutely
I was going to say, how good are Qatar is an easy way of asking this
I have
question.
No idea, because I only saw them play in one game, and, you know, Japan were at the World Cup. How good are Japan? I just don't know. It's hard to say.
They're both in the Copa America, aren't they, as we mentioned in the last pod. So interesting.
It was nice, actually, that Bahraini Sheikh, who's the boss of the Asian equivalent of UEFA, was presenting the medals with Gianni Infantino, and he's in the news at the moment because of...
Save Hakim campaign.
A lot of people seem to think Hakim is in jail in Thailand because of this guy, so I hope himself and Infantino had a little chat about it, but I doubt that very much so.
He will be remanded in a Thai prison for another 60 days. His next court date to fight extradition to his native Bahrain is set for April the 22nd. He pleaded outside a Bangkok court for Thailand not to send him home to Bahrain. This is what he said. He said, "Please speak to Thailand. Don't send me to Bahrain. Bahrain won't defend me." His legs were in chains. Craig Foster, the former Australian international, sort of leading the campaign to get him freed. We will, of course, keep you updated as and when anything else happens.
Yeah, Craig Foster, who 20 years ago was my next-door neighbour but one, mm-hmm. When he was playing for Crystal Palace. And I think while living near me and just being subjected to my aura, he became a great human rights campaigner. Yeah. And he has a column on the website that's well worth reading.
And I have just retweeted that, so... find it and read it. FA Cup replays this week, Tuesday, Brentford-Barnet. And Barnet a bit upset that Brentford haven't given them enough tickets. That's what they're saying. Brentford say it's health and safety. Newport Borough, QPR, Portsmouth, Wolves and Shrewsbury. Wolves go off to Marbella for some warm weather training after that game. On Wednesday, West Brom-Brighton. A couple of questions. Stephen says, who would Barry rather spend 6 hours in the Natural History Museum with? Richard Keys or Sean Dyche, and why?
Sean Dyche, because I think you could have some knowledgeable or interesting conversations with him about various exhibits and
specifically what the worms taste like.
I just don't think Richard and I would get along.
I once bumped into Damien Duff in the Natural History Museum at the Wildlife Photography of the Year exhibition. It's a great exhibition. Didn't expect Damien Duff or any left wingers to be in there, to be honest. Sulaco, Guppy, none of them. Ray says, does Barry have a skin regime that he abides by? Wash, exfoliate, moisturise?
No, I always wash my face with sort of face washy stuff before I shave, because it just makes it easier.
Okay.
And I've recently discovered the absolute brilliance of those razors with the ball head thing. It's like a hip joint, basically, but they're the business.
Oh, well, thank you. So, great answer, very detailed answer for Ray there. It's worth asking a question for Thursday's pod. And Matt says, how does Jonathan feel about Vera? For me, Jeff, she's the best TV detective since Columbo.
Oh, I mean, let's not be silly, but she's up there. She's good. I didn't see last night. I'm looking forward to watching that later in the week. Obviously, it's the football tonight, plus Silent Witness tonight. It's also True Detective, which I think the third season's... a massive return to form. And we've got Endeavour coming up, I think, 15th of February. That starts again. So I think we're in a golden age of a TV detective. And it's, very exciting times. And if anybody in TV wants to get me to do another column on anything to do with that, I'm very much available.
Do you know who Vera is, Barry? I don't know who Vera is.
No.
It's played by Brenda Blethyn, Sunday Night ITV, set in the northeast.
Is it eponymous? I mean, is it called Vera? Is that the name of the show?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Okay.
What have you made of the current series of Silent Witness? Trying a bit too hard to be trendy, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the drugs one was it was sort of very box-ticky. What I did like was the bit when there was a meth lab exploded, and one of the victims, they were trying to identify him, and they found the letters P-A-R-T-I sort of melted onto his chest. And far quicker than me, which I'm slightly annoyed by, but I guess it possibly edited it. And also she was reading off a script, whereas I was doing it live. Clarissa identified that as being a badge of Partizani, of Tirana. Boom, like that. Which I think...
Do you think they're writing it for you now, what? Jonathan?
That was suggested. And I can't... I mean, I'd love it if that's true, but surely not. I mean, if they are, brilliant. Keep going.
Oh, well, what a way to finish today's pod. Thank you for your time, Barry.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Susie.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Wilson.
Cheers.
We'll be back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.